When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Bingetown, how are we feeling today? It's your boy Dave, and I am joined by fellow co-hosts Brian and Kyle. And if you couldn't tell by the title, today we are covering Netflix's live-action adaptation of Avatar: The Last Airbender, specifically episodes 1 and 2, titled Aang and Warrior. To start this recording off, I'm going to go on a little bit of a tangent here with our history with this show. So I think the show came out in about 2005, so we were about 10 years old when the show came out. And it immediately took over. I don't specifically remember getting into a point of watching like week by week, but I was heavily addicted into Nickelodeon back in the day. So shows like Avatar: The Last Airbender, SpongeBob, you know, all those OGs were just like constantly on repeat on my TV. So rewatching live episodes, rewatching old episodes, I feel like even without a rewatch now, I could probably just tell you the entire story without even having to go back and watch. And that's how much I watched it back in the day. I also vividly remember back in 2008 when the finale dropped and I had all of us over to watch it at my house. We were 12 years old at that point. So it was like our first ever watch party for a show, you know, before the Game of Thrones and for all shows like that that came around. And we didn't even know what was going on. We didn't know we were a part of history at the moment. And I just remember us like kind of wrestling after the episode, just like pretending to each be our own bender. And, you know, this is just one of the best, if not arguably the best animated show of all time. That's up for discussion, obviously, but I'll quickly say that I don't know what your guys is. I've watched Korra. We're not going to spend too much time talking about Korra, but I just want to know if you guys have watched that as well, just really quickly.
I've seen the first two seasons.
Okay.
I've watched it.
Okay. And so with all that being said, there was a lot of mixed emotions about this show's announcement. We all remember the disaster that was the M. Night Shyamalan take on the movie that came out whatever year that was, and that soured so much of the legacy of this animated show. So we weren't exactly, I guess, stoked about this release, but we do understand that it's kind of a new era. Live actions are becoming somewhat normal and more popular, and they're being done more well done than they were in the early 2000s. So we, of course, had to give it a chance. And then specifically talking about these two episodes, I will say, based on our text, I feel like I am going to be the highest on maybe specifically episode one. I honestly really, I won't say really enjoyed. I enjoyed episode one, and episode two was meh. I will agree that episode two was not anything crazy special. I thought episode one was good, was definitely way better. But I'm roped into the show enough that I want to keep watching. The only kind of bad thought I have with the show is that I'm watching and I just want to watch the animated version. Like, it's just, the animated is just so much, it just means so much to us. So with all that being said, I'll finally pass it over to you two. I know I kind of talked a little bit there and kind of probably took a lot of what you guys were going to say, but I'll let you guys go ahead and speak and throw your two cents for both the original show and the live action, just really quickly.
Yeah, I'll pick it up. I mean, what can you say about the animated show? It is just a beloved part of my childhood. And in preparation for the live action, I rewatched all of season one in a matter of probably 48 hours. It's just such a good story with such good characters, such good voice acting. It is literally, you know, you see that meme of the hand-drawn horse and then... Yeah. It trails off and it becomes like a kindergartner's sketch. This is truly the embodiment of meme where the horse is fully drawn,
perfectly drawn
to finish. Yes, I can't say enough about how much I just love and cherish the original animated series. So for that reason, I went into this, you know, the M. Night Shyamalan disaster aside, I went into this just thinking at best, this could be a nice like nod to the original source material that will never even sniff the quality of the original. that was the best case scenario. And at worst, it would just be a 8-episode M. Night Shyamalan-esque thing. And where I think we landed through 2 episodes is somewhere in the middle of that. It's fine. I don't think the writing is doing them any favors. I don't absolutely hate it. And I'm expecting it to kind of settle into itself as we get towards the middle and the late part of the season. But my entire take on this live action is it's just unnecessary. I think they're cramming it down our throats and nobody's really asking for it. It's just a studio that knows that people will watch it if they make it. Mm-hmm. So they made it, and it, I don't know. It's just okay. And through 2 episodes, it's fallen a little flat for me, which was expected.
We'll just have to see by the, I feel like truly until we get an ending, there's no way for us to know truly if this was a success or not.
Definitely.
Yeah, B Times, I think that was well said. I feel like I share pretty much everything you said. It felt like the phrase I was floating around as I was thinking is just, this feels like something that should have just like stayed in the drafts. Mm-hmm. Like this, like no one really needed this show to be made. It just feels like I'm watching it and I'm enjoying parts. It's like, oh, okay, like waiting for this character to come in, and like someone like Suki was cool. Like it was like, okay, like we know that she's coming. I thought she was a good character in episode 2. And it's like, okay. And things like that are cool, but it just feels like why would I watch this when I could just watch the animated thing? I understand the idea, like the creative idea of being like, let's make it more like serious/mature. And it's just like, I don't know. For me personally, I don't care about a more mature Avatar story.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's just, and something that I had said to yesterday when Dave and I were talking off the podcast is I almost feel like if I didn't know anything about the original, like if I thought that this live action show was pure original content, not a remake of something, I think I would enjoy it more.
Yeah.
Because like the world concepts are cool and all that kind of stuff. And I wouldn't have like this comparison to something else. It would be its own thing. And I think I would enjoy it a lot more, but it just, you can't help but compare it. That being said, I think I have been enjoying it more than I thought I would.
Mm-hmm. I'm with you. I mean, I guess like about a year ago, if you asked me going into this, you know, I would definitely not have been excited. Live actions are always trash. But in the past year alone, live action adaptations have just, especially through Netflix, have done really well, specifically going to UU and Alice in Borderland's kind of a little stretch. And then One Piece, of course. But I agree with you. Like if it was like a different story, like I know they announced this animated movie that's going to come out and Aang and all of them are going to be in their 20s and 30s. If they had decided to take that as a live action route, I think that would be fine.
That would have been cool.
Yeah. Because then it's
cool,
like
stretching it, but yeah, it would have been more interesting.
It's just exactly what you were saying, Kyle. It's just like, why watch this when there's just the original to come out? Like if it was new content, it would be so much better. And I think it would get a lot of people more excited rather than just like, oh, we're about to watch like a worse variation of the original.
Yeah. Cause it's like Iroh, it's like, okay, unbelievably beloved character. And now this man whose name I forget has to come in and play that character. And it's just, no one is going to think it's the same, and it doesn't need to be the same, but it needs to be good. And it's just such a hard kind of magic and essence to capture continually over all these characters, all these scenes, these locations, these moments. It seems like too tall of a task.
Mm-hmm. I also think just in the confines of an 8-episode live action, when you're trying to adapt, I think it was an 18-episode season 1, you can't really pay enough attention and time and care with a lot of these storylines. For instance, I think they were in the Southern Air Temples for all of 5 minutes of screen time. And that was a full 30-minute
episode. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. And it was very emotional and heart wrenching. And you really got to, you know, take some time with Aang feeling those feelings. And in this, just the pacing is at a breakneck speed. I just think we're trying so hard to just get through it all that it's not really allowing us to pay enough attention to detail for every unique little thing. But
yeah.
Absolutely.
They're just losing some of the charm, man. The charm.
Yeah.
And the charm is what made it. The charm is really what made it.
With that all being said, though, we will have some positive things to say. Don't worry. Yeah. But for these recordings specifically, our discussions are going to be a little bit different than our stereotypical recordings. We're going to just kind of talk about big bucket groupings rather than just scene by scene. So specifically for this first bucket that we're going to talk about, it's just going to be all of the scenes that transpired 100 years ago. So I'm not going to list everything, but we can talk about the battle, Sozin's introduction, the plan, Aang, Monk Gyatso, and the extinction of the airbenders. If whoever wants to go first in any order, go ahead.
This was a change that I thought was good. Like starting the story 100 years ago, I thought the opening scene with the airbenders, with the earthbenders was sick. I thought the earthbending looked cool. I really liked the way he was like punching the ground and almost unlocking the earth. Mm-hmm. And then it was, you know, changing and he was terraforming things. I thought all of that was really cool. It's just, I don't know. I think the biggest thing for me in these scenes was that Gyatso felt a little different. With the way he went out and all that kind of stuff would be my only complaint. But I was genuinely positively surprised when I watched the first 20 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I would agree. I think this was a change that added something to the original story. You know, we never got to see what is the genocide, essentially, of the airbenders. We never really saw that on screen. But I think that was a valuable use of the first 15 minutes, you know, establish these firebenders. And we're getting it through the POV of Fire Lord Sozin at the time. They are bad dudes. I did like the respect that he showed Gyatso. They had that line that just said, on any other day, you guys probably would have prevailed, but not today with the comet. Mm-hmm. That was cool. And I think we didn't get to see a lot of that airbender society in the animated series. So it was nice to kind of see that part of the story here. And that's kind of a theme for me throughout the two episodes. You know, I actually did not hate kind of the small narrative changes that they made for the live action. For me, I kind of appreciate that they wanted this to be its own distinct thing from the animated series. And they made some decisions about the story that made it appear just that.
Yeah, totally with you guys on everything you said. I thought the earthbending, firebending battle at the beginning was honestly really well done. Met my standards, I would say. Everything looked good. It's going to take a little bit of time, obviously, with things like that to get used to from getting it from animated to live action, but earthbending battle was sick. But yeah, the extinction of the airbenders, I was honestly very happy that we got that, because as much as like I know what's going to happen, but even during the scene I'm watching it and like my heart is racing, I'm like, I really don't want to see this air temple fall at all. This is just so uncharacteristic of like a kid's show. And the one thing that we did touch a little bit on in the intro is the fact that, you know, the stakes are high in the live action here. Like we see, not that they weren't high in the animated show, like there were implied deaths in the show, but we never got to see them on camera, especially with, you know, burning alive. That's something that's gruesome and horrifying to watch. And I think putting that in here is a good take. And that's always going to be something I like in live action adaptations. It's just how much they can push that a little bit. So I have no complaints there at all. The maybe one complaint that I had in terms of the air temple was Aang in the beginning, just like soaring through the skies. That
flying?
Yeah. He wasn't flying, because the glider at the episode one proves that he does require the glider to fly. But I'm watching it, I'm like, this guy is not gliding like to the ground. He is legitimately flying, like how the guy was
Peter Pan.
Well, I was.
It
say
was
the guy
very Peter Pan. Thank
Korra.
You.
I thought yeah. I was thinking the guy from Korra, but yes.
Okay. Peter yeah. Pan-esque. True.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was that was shocking, I would think, for sure. But I don't know. For me, I was trying to focus immediately on like the relationships between the characters,
mm-hmm.
and how they felt. So I feel like that is ultimately, I think, the biggest thing that needs to translate. Because like B-Tom said, you need to make some narrative changes. Mm-hmm. But as long as the relationships between the characters are kind of true to where they should be, I think that's kind of where the foundation should start. And I think the relationship between Aang and Monk Gyatso was good. I thought it was mm-hmm. like borderline perfect. And Gyatso feels like this kind of goofy, happy-go-lucky
guy.
Gyatso,
to be honest, in the live action.
And what I had said earlier about like my one complaint, it's just that the scene where Aang finds his body in the cartoon is so good. Like what it implies that he like took on all of those firebenders and all that kind of stuff. And that is just for me like iconic. So it was like a little disappointing to see him go out the way he went out type of deal. But I can see the way they like why they changed it type of. I mean, it is kind of cool that to see like they don't really imply it so much. But Monk Gyatso in the cartoon is implied that he's pretty much like the strongest airbender.
I think it was. What I was going to say on top of that is I think they did a good enough job because Sozin did show up and was like, Gyatso, like,
that's
the real one. It's just any other day of the year or, you know, yeah. Like, you probably would have held your own, but not today. And so I think that was enough for me personally, but I totally get what you're saying. Like, Gyatso was supposed to be the one, you know, like yeah. He is the defender.
I think it's fair to say on paper, Gyatso versus Sozin, that's a cool matchup for sure. Yeah. It's just, I think I personally I have like an emotional connection to like just that scene of him in the room with all of the firebenders that he took out.
Yeah, I was at
like,
least
damn, what a fucking cool last stand type of deal.
I was hoping that some of the firebenders would like some of their armor, you know, would at least be like there implying that he took down a few of them too, but it was just his body. I don't think he took down any of them. And it's like, it also kind of plays in, I guess, to the air nomad style. Yeah. But overall, honestly, like you guys said, first 20 minutes, I thought were really well done besides the whole Aang flying portion of everything.
Yeah.
The only other, actually maybe one other complaint I had is, and this might, again, just might be due to like the time constraints that we're saying that you're trying to fit 18 episodes into, you know, 12 episodes, season, whatever. It felt like when Aang rushed off from the air temple, like he does that in the animated show, obviously, like we know that's what happens, but I don't know. I felt like a little rush that he was just like, he's kind of like at the air temple and he's like thinking, he's like, all right, Appa, like, let's just peace and go on like a little joyride. And I think it was maybe, I don't know, maybe I'm just remembering it a little bit differently, but I felt like that was a little bit like, I get where he's coming from, that he's just been donned this huge burden of becoming the Avatar and like he wants to go think on it, but it felt like a little weird that he would still just straight up leave the air temple.
Well, they did condense this in the animated series. There are two separate flashbacks. He doesn't run away because he learns about he's the Avatar. In a different flashback later on, he already knows he's the Avatar, but they're going to send him away because Gyatso isn't,
yeah, it's like spread out
train so hard. So yeah, I think that's just the constraints of the live action 8 episodes.
Yeah, that's, I think, my biggest worry. It's an example of my biggest worry. This is a problem that Luke and I talked about with the Percy Jackson story, is that there's a potential where they have like these bullets where it's like, we need to do these, and then filling in between those of how we get to those things and how those things come about is where I feel like a lot of times things fall flat. Percy Jackson kind of felt like it was like, okay, like we're going A to B to C to D to E, and we're just like hitting all of these beats. And it's like the glue gray area up in the middle wasn't as fleshed out as we wanted it to be. I think that's kind of my biggest worry, is how we're getting from these big story beats. Mm-hmm. And then the reasoning of what's pushing us there. Obviously they changed some things, like just to jump very quickly to episode 2, where when they go to Kyoshi Island, it's obviously different than it is in the cartoon, and it's more serious and things like that. So that's, I didn't notice it so much in this scene. Honestly, what I noticed from this scene was that I thought it looked fucking cool. The live action of him flying on Appa, like in the storm and like the huge wave. Like I thought that looked really cool. Yeah,
definitely. Absolutely. The Avatar state has been looking clean too. And I like actually the intricacy to the markings. Like they're not, it's not just like a blue arrow. There is like a little bit of like pattern to the designs in the arrow, which I like. And I think that was actually something that they took away, maybe like the one thing that they took away from the M. Night Shyamalan movie. I think it was the same for Aang in that movie.
It was so good to hear just Aang.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, it really step was. One.
Yeah.
Step one.
Cleared it. Already better. But the next bucket we'll get into is just the water tribe. So specifically Wolf's Cove, which was new for us, I think. I don't think we'd ever got that reference in the animated show. No. So just a little bit of world building. Fine.
I didn't know if that was something I had forgotten or not.
Yeah, no, I had to literally go back and make sure. And it was just like, they are from the Southern Water Tribe, not Wolf's Cove or whatever, you know.
Yeah.
But so here we can just talk about the introduction to Sokka and Katara. Zuko as well. The Firebenders landing on the cove, and then we'll cover all those buckets, and then we'll move on to Aang being captured. But for now, just the introduction of those three characters and kind of the fight on Wolf's Cove.
I think it looks really good. I'm not sure how deep I want to get into Sokka. I think one of the big things that came out is the quote that they were going to take away a lot of the misogynistic undertones that Sokka has. And I do think that that detracts from the character for me, because he was a very flawed young leader coming into his own, and the misogyny was a part of it. He was saying, oh, Katara, you know, you shouldn't be waterbending, which they do still hit. But he emphasizes just the danger of waterbending in with the current climate of the world. It could be a danger because firebenders could take her away. In the animated series, he goes a step further and says, you should be like helping with the knitting in the village. And that gives like a kind of a funny, like brotherly sister thing. And Katara can play off that and get like heated at him. And that actually winds up having her free Aang from the ice. But without that, you know, he's not very flawed. He just kind of is this young, serious guy. Mm-hmm. The only thing he's bringing to the table is that he wants to be a leader and a warrior. And that makes him very one-dimensional. And as we've already said, they took away a little bit of the charm with the comedic beats, just because I don't think they have enough time to fit in that kind of dialogue. So in the animated series, we have this young, goofy, misogynistic leader, or, you know, fledgling leader, but in this, we just have this young person trying to prove he's a warrior, and that makes him very one-dimensional, which is, it's just a shame to me, but he's good. I don't know.
He looks like Sokka.
He
looks like Sokka.
You're absolutely right, B-Toms. Go ahead.
I do just want to say the acting, I think, has been very good. I want to emphasize, I just don't think they have the dialogue that they can work with. I mean, it's just very one-dimensional stuff. It's surface level. I couldn't tell you how many times Katara had to say that Aang is giving them hope. It was probably like 5 times. It's just like they are spoon-feeding us exposition, and I was hoping for writing that was a little bit deeper than that and wouldn't just lead us directly to the plot points that we're supposed to be hitting, but they are, and it's a shame. But the acting's been good.
Yeah, I think that starting with the most basic, my eyes, I think Sokka and Katara look great. Mm-hmm. I think the characters look really good, but I would agree, B-Toms. I think for sure for me, when I was first watching, I thought that the acting was just flat, but I think that your point about the actual writing is what makes it flat. It just, I don't know, it feels very, I don't want to use the word flat again, but it's just kind of just like, I say thing, you respond to thing I say, mm-hmm. type of deal. I don't know. I don't really know the right way to describe it, but yeah, I just, and I, there's obviously the time constraints of the live action, but also they can't do every joke from the cartoon, and they don't have the sound design from the cartoon. There's so many good, funny sound design things where like Sokka gets shocked by something and his eyes get big and blink, and it's like blink, blink, like they have the sound, and that adds to the charm and the funniness. And it's just, yeah, I don't know. I think I'm hoping as a character, as we get into more situations, he grows on me. But I think for now, I don't know. I don't want to say it a ton of times, but it's just not the same. It's just not there for me.
I'm not against anything that you guys have said so far. And especially with live actions, like the side characters to me, you know, they can be done pretty easily. It feels like there's a lot of pressure when it comes to the main characters. Like when you come, it takes me so much to get used to like our main character Aang. Like, I don't think they're doing a bad job. It's just, it's different. And it's just so hard. I have these expectations of the main characters, like our main trio. And one, the acting's already going to be tough because it's not animated. Like Kyle was saying, with all like the extra sounds that they can do and just like the visualizations that they can emphasize to make things funnier. But it's just hard with what they're being dealt with. And I'm not going to like hate on anybody's acting here. I think they're doing the best with what they got. Of the trio, I would say Sokka's probably the best still for me. I'm not totally quite sold on Aang yet. Granted, he does feel like a 12-year-old. Like,
Yeah, that's what I think for me, where I would almost say that he feels like the best representation.
And that's probably why I'm not like sold. Like, he's this bright eyed 12-year-old, and it's like, I'm not too keen on it, but
I did look up Sokka's actor is 21 in real life, and I believe Katara's is 17, and they are playing 15 and 14-year-old respectively. So I guess Sokka's actor is the oldest, so I guess he has a little bit more acting chops and is a bit more experienced.
How old is Aang's actor, by the way? I actually did never
look that one up.
Because so it's a, he's a little small guy.
Yeah, I'm not really sure.
Like Katara.
Another thing too that Aoki brought up that I now agree with, especially after watching the second episode, it does seem like they're still trying to find like that chemistry between all three of them.
Yeah,
obviously. They really have just met Aang, so that makes some sense. But also, I just think as them as actors, the three of them are still finding this like triple threat trio type of vibe that we know that they had in the cartoon show. So maybe it will get better as the season goes on. Just for now, it does feel like it's not fully there.
Aang's actor is 14 years old.
Yeah, okay. That feels about right. Mm-hmm. But let's flip this over to the other side. Let's talk about Zuko here, because for me, I'm gonna be honest, I think Zuko was absolutely perfect. I'm not gonna lie, I thought one, from just the mannerisms, but two, like his voice honestly even sounds like Zuko a little bit, and I thought he was unbelievable in first episode, second episode. He has been the most dead-on character for me, and I have been, anytime he's been on screen, I've been so excited. I'll kind of agree with Kyle that Iroh, maybe not so much. Again, that's a beloved character, so the expectations are hard, and the expectations were high for Zuko, don't get me wrong, but this actor has crushed it. I think anytime Zuko's on the screen, I have just been like totally paying attention. I'm willing to listen.
I always knew that Iroh and Sokka were going to suffer the most from, I expected they were going to have to lose a lot of the comedy that was from the original, and I knew Iroh and Sokka would suffer from that. And like Kyle said, Iroh is like on a pedestal, is one of the most beloved animated characters. His voice actor passed away while they were still coming out with the animated series, so people just love that performance as a whole. And this guy, I actually really like the actor in general. He's been in a few things. He's in The Mandalorian. Mm-hmm. He's doing a good job, but they don't give him too much to work with again. I think he looks good. But Dave, like you said, Zuko is probably my favorite of our four main characters in terms of casting. I think he's got the moody teenager beats, but also he does a really good job in scenes with kind of facial expressions. Mm-hmm. He looks nervous too, when you can tell he's losing his grip on whatever situation he's being dealt with. So yeah, I think he gave a pretty strong performance through the first two episodes.
I won't add a ton. I'll just complete the chorus of praise for Zuko. I think for sure I agree that he's been my favorite representation.
Yeah, and then we can just jump right into the fight of Zuko landing. He's like, I am Prince Zuko, son of Fire Lord. I thought that scene was, again, it's, yeah. I hear it in his voice. It was so good. But the fight honestly was legit to me. The highlight for me was easily Zuko's kicking. Like, I think Aang knocks everybody to the ground, and Zuko's like from the ground looking up. He's like, no way. And he does that fucking, the iconic spiral kick, and he's dishing out the fire. I was like, that was hot. That was definitely hot for right there. But overall thoughts, this was, I guess, we still haven't really seen the full effects of waterbending, but we get a little bit more air here and some firebending as well.
Yeah. And this is, I think, a good opportunity to discuss where there's a difference here in how this goes down. There's no otter penguins, which is perfectly fine. Like, that's fine to have a type of change. You know, Aang earlier left in the cartoon. Rather, he leaves kind of under his own volition. Him and Appa head out, and then he slides back on the otter penguin. I thought this was a perfect way to change it and make it more reasonable for the live action.
Yeah.
The movie, I thought, was like, I saw it on my timeline, I think yesterday, of the movie scene of this, and it's just absurd to like what happens here. So I was like, okay, this is perfectly fine. I just wanted to highlight, like, there's a change here where like it doesn't need to be one to one to still be good. And this was an example of that.
And I think by the kids and the other person who's now in charge, now that Sokka left, I think it gives a little more like safety for Sokka in the sense that, okay, these guys kind of did some work against Zuko and these firebenders. Like the village is still in somewhat good hands. Like if, as long as there's no, you know, airships of firebenders coming, like the village is in good hands.
Yeah. Yeah. This was also, before we move on, I assume, to the last bucket, is an issue that I had. So Gran seems to be the one that does like the, like the
100
fire.
Years past.
Yeah, like that thing. And that just was like, ah, oh, man, like this
totally
is just
cheesy. Totally.
Yeah, it's just not it. It's just not it.
I was very shocked that they didn't just leave that as the intro verbatim.
Oh, speaking
they
of, we're going to talk about
very
that too.
Weird CGI.
I didn't mind the intro, to be honest. I did not. I mean, of course, the 100
the years monologue.
Past. It's tough.
That
the monologue
shit belongs to Katara. That is his and nobody else's. Yes. I guess they kept it in the family, but yeah,
I will
that
say,
felt
though,
a little forced.
I will say, though, the intro, it did sound like they had, like, the was it not the original Katara voice actress who did the intro again? Like,
no clue.
It sounded the same to me, so I just thought that was a good homage to the original series that they kept at least the intro voice actor the same. So I guess one complaint I did actually have before moving on, if you want to say something, Kyle, go ahead.
No, that almost just like makes it worse.
I guess if
they had her right there, I mean, maybe they thought it would be too on the nose, but I don't know. It seems like
that's an okay time to do a one to one.
Yeah. Yeah.
The one thing that I just kind of felt like, I guess, again, just to add to the rushed aspect of things, is like Katara's trust in Aang. Like some of the scenes that we get missed in these early episodes, like they board that Fire Nation ship that they see in the distance. And, you know, Aang actually has the opportunity to save Katara a couple times, really develop that trust. Whereas here she wakes him up and then it's just like immediately just only piqued in the interest that he's an airbender. It's not like she has this full on trust in him. I mean, obviously, I guess, you know, she can kind of tell, but, you know, I'm just saying the skip scenes for me in these moments made it just feel like the relationship between Katara and Aang at this point was a little bit rushed. She was just immediately glowy eyed and like ready to just throw herself at Aang.
That's kind of how it was in the animated series. And Gran actually has to tell Katara, don't put all of your faith in this boy. And I know I said, how many times does Katara have to say hope? But that actually was a major plot point in the beginning. Katara's like, nothing ever happens here. And now this incredible master airbender comes into our lives. And you guys are telling me not to get carried away with it. So Katara does kind of dive headfirst into him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think it's because we know the original material, it feels implied to me that she understands that he's also a waterbender in the sense that he's the avatar type of deal. So that's kind of the way I was thinking of she's also thinking that way. They talk about it very slightly in episode 2. She brings it up, I think, for the first time in the whole show and doesn't go the way she wants it to. But that's also kind of what I was thinking, is that, because in the cartoon, he like teaches her a little bit about bending, where he's like, the monks taught me about this. And she like tries to do it with the water bending. And then she's like really into it after that type of deal.
Yeah.
But I assume a scene like that will maybe come. But she's already feels pretty good at water bending in the show, kind of. So,
yeah, she's not, I think, as incompetent as she was in like the actual show. But we can move on to this final bucket for episode. Well, I guess final main bucket of episode 1, with being Aang's capture. We can just talk about the conversations that Aang and Iroh have. Also talk about Aang's escape, really. Those are the two main things. But I will say, again, we've talked enough about Iroh and how we feel about it, but I will say this conversation kind of felt really, I really like this conversation, to be honest, because, you know, right off the bat, you can kind of tell in his voice that he's giving this pitch, you know, oh, the Fire Nation, you know, we're doing this for peace. But like, you can still kind of hear it in his throat that he doesn't fully believe in the cause. And Aang obviously detects that right away. And the one part that I had to write down was just like, Aang calls him out and he doesn't answer, but Iroh just walks away and he says, I look forward to the many conversations we'll have in the future. And I'm just like, boy, you have no idea how many fucking great conversations you guys are going to have in the future. So, touching moment, I think, between these two characters. Probably the highlight of Iroh's performance so far for me.
For sure. For sure. But it's also, this feels like the perfect example for me of, I think I would have enjoyed this more if I had no recollection or like knowledge of the original. Like if this, yes, to me, I was pure original content, and you like, you were getting this first inkling of, all right, this older guy, there's something else to him, I think I would be like, oh, okay, I'm going to watch out for that. Like, that's very interesting versus me thinking like, okay, how does this guy sound versus old Iroh, like, or original Iroh, like all that kind of stuff. That's not the right takeaway, but that's just, it felt inevitable for me to think in this scene. But I did like that they introduced him that way in this scene, because that's, I mean, he's the guy.
Yeah. I always like the Jasmine Tea references. Those, I will say, are still pretty funny. The Jasmine Tea is good. I thought the airbending to steal the keys was pretty cool. I think Alki, when we were watching together, was just like, oh, he wouldn't be able to do that. And I was like, eh, he probably would be able to do that. Just like summon a little vortex and just get the keys off. So I didn't have any complaints about that. But the main thing here for me was I was so happy to see the glider. Thank God it's not just Aang flying around without his glider, because that would have been such a devastating blow to the show if that was the case. So that was, oh, and I'm also upset that I'm pretty sure in the animated show, he goes into the Avatar state here and kind of like water bends the shit out of everybody.
He calls this like an avalanche. So they just have him fly away, and him flying with the glider looks really cool. Looks good. They had him like dip along the water too. I think the thing that I hated most was Zuko throws one singular fireball that drills him while he's gliding all the way around. How is that even possible? And then he has another precision fireball that would have hit Appa if not for Katara's kind of water bending, which that water bending, I think she just like summoned a big column of water, which seems a little bit
past her pay grade.
Past her pay grade for this point. And I won't say she was completely incompetent in terms of waterbending at this point in the animated series, because she did like incapacitate three firebenders by doing the ice.
That's a great scene, because she freezes Sokka first and he just goes, Katara!
Well, she doesn't know what she's doing, so she freezes Sokka, and then she just does a 180 and does the same movement. Her eyes are closed, but she's like, I bet this will work.
I know exactly what you're talking about.
Really tinkering with her powers, and they kind of showed that same thing. She didn't mean to do exactly that. She just flung her arms and with intent to save them. But the bending, I always knew was going to look clunky. And I guess what I'm trying to emphasize is some of it really does still look clunky
to me.
But
so far,
fireballs, come on.
To me, it seems okay. The fireballs for the fire bending, not crazy about. The kicks and stuff, though, like when they're actually fluidly motioning the punching and kicking of fire, I think it looks good. But agreed, the fireballs are a little weird to me. Water bending seems to be the clunkiest so far. It just feels like magic almost. It doesn't feel like actual bending. I don't know how to describe it. But again, we haven't really seen a fully fleshed waterbender master yet, so I'll leave it to the benefit of the doubt.
It's also interesting too, and thinking of her doing that bending, and then when we get to the air temple, she says to Sokka, like, I couldn't bend enough water to fill a thimble before he came. And it's kind of, she can now do that, but we haven't seen why she can do that so much. Maybe it's the hope inside of her that Aang is around type of deal.
It was those words that, just the simple, like, it was the words that Aang said. It was just, you know, balance and all this, finding it within yourself. Yeah. And that apparently made her become that much better. So.
Yeah, we'll see. I mean, they're obviously going to talk a ton more about her waterbending journey and her and Aang's waterbending journey, hopefully together. We'll see. Yeah, but we'll see.
All right. And then we can talk about, I'll say infamous air temple scene here. Personally, it was just quick. I mean, did not really feel as sentimental as it did in the animated show. This scene was meh for me. I don't really have many things to say besides that.
I will say in the animated show, though, it's a very fleshed out scene that we see Aang seeing what the wreckage now is. And then we get a few flashbacks. I feel like they already captured the emotional of the loss of the airbenders through the opening scene of this episode. So they kind of already got that out of the way, which allowed them to kind of breeze through this. But I was watching this episode with my roommate who had already watched it. And I looked up at him as we were ending the episode, like, oh, man, they're not going to do like the Avatar room where like mm-hmm. we see all the statues.
Yes.
Because that was just really
that's where
really
it gets
cool.
announced. Like it's that's where we get all the perspectives of the different nations of like the Avatar has yeah. returned.
Yeah. And the cycle too. They talk about the actual cycle.
Yeah.
Which we'll get to it more when we start talking episode two. It does seem like they are replacing Roku's role in the story with Avatar Kyoshi, which
I didn't even notice that. Yeah.
I'm kind of okay with because it's, like I said earlier, making the live action a little bit distinct, and you can definitely get the same information through the voice of Avatar Kyoshi.
Hmm.
But I love Roku, man.
Yeah.
I want to see a lot of Roku, yeah. too. But I also, just I mean, want to see it all.
Nah, I feel like that's, for me, we'll see how it continues. It probably will just be a Kyoshi Island thing because they're on Kyoshi Island. But
yeah, I think so.
Him and Roku have to have that relationship, not only because sure. he's the last Avatar or like the latest Avatar, however you
yeah,
want to say
the prior one, yeah.
The prior
yeah.
Avatar. It just means obviously so much that he was a firebender, a member of the Fire Nation. He was Sozin's best friend. Some people would like to say lover type of deal. So, that just relationship has to be there.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
We shall see when that starts to come in. But yeah, I don't really have a ton to add about the Air Temple itself. Yeah.
That's really
Momo looked great.
Yeah, that'll be.
That's a good point.
Yeah,
I like Momo did look good. I was actually he popped on the screen. I was like, all right, let's go. We got the final member, baby.
We're
it was
really
a little
here.
Hype. I was doing some fist pumps, but we can now work our way into episode two, which I feel like will be a lot quicker of a discussion now that we've got most mm-hmm. of our just main complaints and problems out of the way. Just straight up for me, not as good as the first, really. So we're just gonna have kind of three buckets here. And we'll get into this first one. It's just going to be the arrival of our squad on Kyoshi. So my first note was the scenery is beautiful. So I think we saw even before they arrive on Kyoshi, maybe it was like the air temple, like them leaving the air temple, like in the background. And it's just, it looks so good. Like it does make me want to just visit these places. It looks incredible. But other than that, we can just go right into the introduction of Suki, the elderly lady that's kind of a biatch, and then the relationship between Suki Sokka and kind
she
of
she was not a biatch, but okay,
she was a protector.
You know, it's very
she's
funny
like get out of here, and I'm like, come on, let her.
You'll have to be the deciding vote because I actually thought episode two was a little bit better than episode one, and I think
really?
That's because of the nature of episode one had to get through so much exposition, and that lended to some of the cringy dialogue, which I didn't notice as much in episode two. But episode two seemed to stray a little bit more from the source material.
Yeah, that's interesting.
That's all I got.
I feel like I have a thought that's episode one, you're going in and it's like, okay, what the fuck is this going to be? And so you're thinking of like every little thing as you see a scene. It's like, okay, like, what does this look like? How does it relate to the original? And then I think by the time you get to episode two, you're kind of your expectations are starting to get more calibrated in that sense. So I think with that perspective, I probably liked episode two better, but also like not a ton does happen, but it doesn't feel like a ton happens.
I feel like nothing happens. That was like my thing. It's like, I feel like episode one, we had so much good stuff. And then two, it's just, I think
it's
for
tough.
Me, I'm going to be honest, the Suki and Sokka relationship was not doing for me in this, to be honest. Well,
that's because they don't make him misogynistic and calling out her dance lessons and stuff. It really is just like, young woman is attracted to this strapping young man in town, and none of like it's just a 100% blah pancake.
It was
of a young romance.
It was literally two cavemen like meeting, and they lock eyes, and it's just like love at first sight. I'm like, come on! And I was actually a little worried for Suki's character at first because they made her like mute, like she didn't have a fucking line for so long into the episode. I was so worried that she was just going to be this nervous, didn't want to talk to Sokka kind of character. Finally opens up when I think Sokka arrives for the quote-unquote dance lesson, as the animated show would put it. But Yeah, I was a little worried. She was not speaking full sentences. And I'm just like, what is in the scene where Sokka has his shirt off and she like is looking at him blatantly, just checking him out. It's like, come on, what are we doing?
I don't know. If I'm honest, I think I liked that they went into this mindset of like she feels sheltered on this island. You know, like she knows she has a duty to be a Kyoshi warrior.
Yeah, they, I think it was
interesting. Yeah, that they were getting into this idea that she is this young woman still, and she has, you know, typical young woman desires. She, you know, she likes cute boys. Like maybe she wants to see the world, and she still has this duty to the island. And I think it contrasted well with Sokka, and that he is like, I'm a leader too, and. But I'm not in my village. And then it was kind of funny when he's like, how's it go again, Katara? type of deal. And that was kind of the original show charm type of deal. Yeah. But I agree that and this sounds weird to say, and out of context is terrible, but I do miss the fucking misogynistic, sexist part of Sokka just in the development of their early relationship. I think it 100%. Just played a big role.
Like him meeting Suki here was probably the first growth step in his becoming less misogynistic. Like they could have literally had him be misogynistic for one episode, meet Suki, and then it's like, okay, let's reel it back. But Netflix is soft, so
yeah, I don't know. And I will say, she feels like more of a character after this episode than she did after the one episode we get in the cartoon. Yeah. As in, more of like a
deeper, like
more dimensional.
Yeah, I would agree with that. She took off the makeup and I was like, wow, this, I can see what Sokka's looking at. I can see what he's seeing. She was definitely beautiful.
Her actor is 24 years old. So I think she is like the biggest discrepancy between her real character who was supposed to be 15. But
also a 15-year-old warrior might look a little bit more mature than just an average 15-year-old.
Yeah. That'll be she has a lot of responsibility.
Yeah.
I mean, I thought it was kind of funny that they had her wipe off her makeup for the entire second half of the episode because, Dave, I think you're right. It's just the production team being like, no, show up how beautiful this girl is. Take off the makeup.
Yeah. But because it is the makeup is iconic when they're fighting Zuko at the end. Yeah.
100%. Looks cool.
I would say I was pretty happy with how she was portrayed. Kyle, I think you're right. A lot of what they did kind of make her feel like more of an important. Dimensional character
like a Vivi from One Piece. Like a Vivi than One Piece.
Her having like the ear of the leader of the island, I thought was much more explicit here. It's a man in the show.
It is,
which I think is a positive change. It makes way more sense that it would be a woman. Because they're a society of women warriors. Avatar Kyoshi obviously was a very strong-willed woman that was like, you know, represented justice and things like that. So it does make sense that it would be a woman. I thought that was a good change.
The Kyoshi warriors looked fantastic. Mm-hmm. Their uniforms were great. The makeup was on point. And the golden fans, like my favorite weapon in all of Avatar, looked sweet.
Yeah. Yeah,
I'm going to be honest. I felt so stupid when I think it was maybe even episode one that they mentioned Kyoshi was an earthbender. You guys knew that, right? Like, I was mind blown because like, I guess I associate Kyoshi with the fans and they're always airbending with the fans.
It's fair.
So
it's just green.
Yeah. They said in episode one, she's like, oh, we had prior to you, there was Kyoshi, the earthbender, Roku, the firebender. I'm like, Kyoshi, the earthbender. What the fuck? But it does make sense. I mean, I think Kyoshi is like a province of the Earth Kingdom. I'm pretty sure. So it does make sense.
Yeah. I mean, it used to be part of the Earth Kingdom as landmass until she split it into an island.
I just felt
by earthbending.
I just felt so stupid. I was like, oh my God, I can't believe they changed Kyoshi from an airbender to an earthbender. I looked it up and I was like, I'm dead wrong here. then we could just quickly talk about the introduction of Zhao. Zhao.
Yeah, we'll get there.
The word of the Avatar spreading, so we get Zhao, and really not much to talk about if you guys want to bring up his character and how you think he will be going forward.
Not like I don't have a ton to say, I think, about them at the Iroh calls it, but like the headquarters of the Southern
whatever that port was.
It may be, thought they were trying really hard to give Iroh that personality by like going around the food stands, and Zuko's like very one track minded, and Iroh's like, oh, you got to try this, and oh, sticky rice and that kind of stuff. So I thought that like the effort's there to create that dynamic in their relationship.
Because he does, he goes on a shopping spree. I mean, this is the pirate episode, which I'm honestly kind of like, the pirates were cool. I mean, obviously I can quickly think of them when I'm thinking of the anime, but honestly, something that looking back, it could easily be cut. Like, I guess this is also where we can talk about the scroll itself. So Katara gets her hands on the scroll, which again, she originally steals from the pirates in the animated show, but here it's just Grand passing it on. I think that's totally fine. I think that's a completely valid point. Like, there were waterbenders at the Southern Water Tribe for generations. Why wouldn't they have a scroll that would, you know, be have access to different techniques? So that I was totally fine with. And I was like, okay, we can skip the whole pirate thing. I was kind of a little excited. I was like, oh, we're on the port, we're gonna get it. And then they didn't, but I think it was perfectly explained.
The pirates are funny.
Yeah, they
are. Like, what to say, the price of 2 copper pieces.
I like Momo has his rival too, the flying lizard.
Yeah, for sure. I will say, so Commander Zhao at this point eventually becomes Admiral Zhao. He seemed less of a direct antagonist to Zuko. First time they were on the screen together, you could tell that this dude just loved pushing Zuko's buttons, reminding him of his dishonor, and was just really a jerk about it. In this one, he kind of seems to be showing some respect to what is still Prince Zuko.
And you know, Iroh, Dragon of the West. That was a hot shout out right there.
I looked over at my roommate and was just like, Dragon of the West, cool nickname.
Yeah. So cool. It's so cool.
Yeah.
But I will say, eventually Zhao in the animated series recruits the pirates to attempt to assassinate Zuko. So I'm wondering if that storyline will even still happen, if we will see like a pirate for a scene in that. But yeah, not much else to say about Zhao at this point.
Although, he looks good.
Yeah.
He is very prevalent on Kyoshi Island in this episode of the live action, which he was not at all involved in Kyoshi in the animated series. And they didn't give us the firebending rhinoceroses.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Riding around on Zuko. Yep.
Yeah. Big miss. Cool. Big miss there. Yeah. I thought I guess if we want to get to that point, the change of Zhao going to Kyoshi Island was interesting.
Definitely. That was interesting.
I mean, that was the first scene that I think they used just to show us that Zhao is shifting his focus to trying to track down the Avatar. I guess they just wanted to establish that early. I kind of forget exactly when that happens in the animated series, but I was kind of okay with it. And yeah, I don't know.
I think you're right that it just kind of shows that Zhao is completely now also focused on the Avatar. It was a little weird. I was, again, expecting Zuko on the rhinoceroses. Definitely expecting that.
It's enough. It's a big enough magnitude of a change where I'm like, this is interesting. And now I'm thinking about that it's a change and how do I feel about it? Probably versus just maybe enjoying what's on the screen.
Before we get to the my favorite scene of probably both these episodes, I will say, let's talk about Aang's experience in the spirit realm with Kyoshi. My thoughts will just be really quickly that this scene felt like it was brought up from the finale. Like, the finale of the animated show, Aang is going through all of the reincarnations of the Avatar, meeting them one by one, talking about what he needs to do in order to beat the Fire Lord. And it felt like that scene was what was supposed to happen, like was happening here, like his conversation with Kyoshi, because in that scene and in this one, she's talking about, look, you are a warrior. There's no time for you to think about friends, anything. Like, you have to go out and beat the Fire Lord. You're a warrior. There's no time for that. And I thought that was a pretty good and accurate depiction, but it just felt like that they were pulling that scene from the ending and bringing it here a little bit, which I'm not going to complain about. I think this was a decent enough conversation for Aang to kind of get his rear end in motion. So
yeah, it's kind of a reskin too of, he does this with Roku in the temple.
Yes.
Where it's the solstice and then the light hits. And then he can speak with Roku. And then
I would say reskin of that scene specifically too, because then Roku comes out of the temple and starts
over his
messing
body?
Up the
yes, she did
all of in the sages animated, and stuff.
Not in the anime.
She takes over his body. She does take over his body in the trial scene where we find out about why Kyoshi Island is an island and things
that's
like that.
Season two.
Yeah. So here it's like.
But Roku does it season one.
He rides the elephant eel or whatever the hell it is. And
yeah, the Unagi.
Unagi, yes, yes. Okay, yeah. That's what it was. But all right, I'm already jumping ahead. This was fucking badass, man. I was I had to watch this by myself, unfortunately. And I was just sitting down here just, let's fucking go. That was so sick. So she touches Aang. She's like, I'll help you out here. She takes over his body and immediately wipes the floor with Zuko. And I honestly love the firebending, like jet pack kind of shit that they do. They just blast off into space. Yeah. And then when she lands that, like,
Lydia's like Iron Man.
Oh, yeah.
No. It's literally like Iron Man landing on the battlefield.
I was fucking hyped because the explosion that caused was just immense. I was definitely like, okay, this is my favorite scene so far.
She is just the Terminator. And watching this scene, I was thinking to myself, we probably should have reallocated resources towards an Avatar Kyoshi live action prequel rather than this whole reboot nonsense. Yeah. But it was really cool. Yeah, it looked spectacular. And the whole fan base really loves Kyoshi, and a lot of people wanted a little bit more of her story. So it's nice that they kind of took that fan feedback and incorporated it into the narrative of the live action. I already said I'm a little bit concerned if that takes away from Roku's heavy hand in the story as Aang's definitive Avatar mentor. But so far, you know, it's working for me.
Yeah. I could easily see it just being they're on Kyoshi Island, so he should interact with Kyoshi type of thing. In the cartoon, it's very lighthearted for the most part when they're on the island. They really don't invoke Kyoshi a ton at this point. So I can totally see the logic behind having Katara and Aang in like the archives, and they're reading about Kyoshi's life and they're trying to find answers and things like that. I think this is a perfect time for the question to you two that I will also answer, is that the creators told us before that they were going to take away a lot of Aang's kind of willy-nilly sidetrack mission type deal, where like the show, they come here because he wants to ride the elephant koi. Mm-hmm. And in this, he wants to go here because of Avatar Kyoshi. Like, he specifically says that, like, she was known as a master of the Avatar state. Like, we should go there so I can learn more about the Avatar state. I'm just curious of what you guys think of that change.
Well, yeah, that I think it was just a weird plot device. They actually said he was worried that he would hurt someone with the Avatar state, so he had to control it so as to protect Katara and Sokka. There was this very out of place flashback of him, you know, almost pushing his airbending gears off of a mountainside. I was like, okay, well, this is a little wonky.
So, wonky too, because it wasn't even the Avatar state that did that. That was just him airbending.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. I think that's just one of those things. It's a nature of the constraints of the live action.
I'm going to be honest. I kind of like it. To be honest, for me, Book One Water of the animated show is my least favorite of the series. And
still like a 9.5 out of 10.
Yeah, now. No. I'm not saying it's bad by any means. Still 9 out of perfect horse. We're talking perfect horse here.
Perfect horse.
But what I didn't like about season one was probably exactly what we're talking about now, is because that we have this buildup of these side quests that is developing the relationships. Like, I just want to be thrown into it, you know? And like, I know shows obviously can't just like throw you into it, so they have to build the camaraderie and things like that. And when I always look back, I always think like season one is being like one of the more immature ones, because it's, you know, them starting out as a group and they're doing all these side quests and Aang's not really fulfilling his mission. So I'm going to be honest, I kind of like that. It was a good reason on why they need to get to Kyoshi. It wasn't like a side quest. They didn't make it feel like a side quest. Like, here's an actual reason to go to Kyoshi, more so than what the animated version provided. And I'm totally fine with it.
I think I take issue in just that it's a fundamental difference in Aang's character at this point in the journey. He's very quickly gone from, it seems like, running away from the responsibilities to, like, well, I'm on a quest right into it now. Yeah, to, like, okay, be the best version of myself. And that's, like we said, there's time constraints. The live action's a different story type of deal. I think I'm still at a point where I'm kind of clinging to the fun that we had and the whimsy of the early. And I just, the development, I think, feels like it's hot and fast, although we don't really see the aftermath of this scenario and Aang maybe talking more later on about how he feels about what Kiyoshi said and all that kind of stuff. So we shall see. It just feels like right now, having watched two episodes, it's like, okay, we're already at a point where Aang's like,
I get that. I didn't mature. Even kind of think of it from that perspective.
In quotes, mature, like, but
yeah, I like that perspective. I think you're valid in those feelings. 100%.
There was that small scene where Katara is practicing waterbending and Aang kind of dismisses it. Oh, maybe I'll start later. And she kind of says, you know, you got to actually start learning the elements. So that was a little bit of an acknowledgement that he's still uncomfortable with his role as the Avatar. But actually, that scene winds up with them splashing each other in the river. One thing I wanted to bring up in the animated series, from the first time Katara and Aang are on screen, you get the feeling he has a little crush on her and she is only seeing him as a little brother. I'm not getting all of that nuance to their relationship, which is a shame because I think that was immediately evident.
Because Aang in the animated show is fighting for his love. You know, every time he's going for the chase and Katara shutting him down. And there are moments that lend herself to become more open to the idea of, okay, Aang's kind of good looking, you know. I think it was like the fortune telling episode. It's like you're gonna end up with a very powerful bender, and that part's sick. Yeah,
I bring that up here in Kyoshi Island because in the animated series that was the first role reversal, because he's getting fawned over by all of the young girls from Kyoshi Island and Katara kind of gets a little bit jealous, but none of that's really established here, and I think that's just one of the things that they couldn't really spend a lot of time on, unfortunately.
Yeah, maybe they'll do it next season. Almost I have seen some like jumping ahead, just like, you know, reading things on the internet of people saying, and they said that it was kind of missing from this season. Kind of two sides of that coin. Some people said it doesn't really come off as great in the live action with people who we know are legitimately young.
Yeah.
Type of thing. I don't really know. We'll have to see where it goes. I can't imagine that they don't, if they get through the whole story, that Aang and Katara don't have a romantic relationship. That feels crazy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. 100%.
So, we'll just have to see.
I'm looking ahead, and there are some episodes from the series that if they include it, they couldn't avoid it, like Secret Tunnel.
Oh, I feel like they, even if that is considered a side quest, there is no way they can't do it because it's like the cabbages thing. It's like,
yeah, I think I would stop the podcast.
Have the cabbages. You can't have the tunnel people not, you know, like, I don't know. it's all in the same. They have,
well, that's
to
what that. We think. Hopefully Netflix shares our opinions of what is crucially important and not.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But I like that. I like the fact that Aang was able to transform into Kyoshi, because that was something in the animated when he turns into Roku that I thought was really cool and wasn't really kind of explained enough. So, and I think I really like the idea that he was able to do it here, and they kind of explained, oh, it's because you were at like her temple specifically that you were able to kind of embody Kyoshi. And so I hope going forward, maybe not only do we see the Roku scene eventually too, but maybe we throw in a waterbender in there too, that overtakes him. I think that would be really cool too. Maybe at the Northern Water Tribe. Well, I guess that maybe then not so much, because he does need to control the Avatar state by then, but
yeah,
I digress. Just the final scene here, the last bucket, if you even want to call it that, is just Zhao letting the word out that the Avatar has returned, and we get our first glimpse at Fire Lord Ozai. Just want to know, I thought he was pretty handsome, guys.
Casting.
I have seen the shirtless pictures, and boy, was I hot and bothered.
Hell yeah.
He looked deadly, man.
Dude, his face looks carved out of stone.
The only spoilers, if you even want to call it that, that I've seen are people just above and beyond, just like Fire Lord Ozai was amazing. Like that's like so.
I wouldn't hate it if Zuko and Ozai are like great in the show, like like head and shoulders above people. I think that would make the show pretty interesting.
That would carry the show because that's like your two villains, like right there. That so. One other thing that I thought was kind of lame here was when Zuko and Zhao are kind of departing a little bit and Zhao's walking away and Zuko's like, don't tell anyone about the Avatar.
Like, yeah.
Okay. I was like, come on, bro. That was, that was like the only down, like, and that wasn't even his fault. That's just like that was such a terrible line that was just felt unnecessary.
Yeah.
Like, didn't need to be said at all. And then Zhao has that smile and it's like, come on, what are we doing here? But that's it.
Yeah, the reason why I brought up Zhao being on Kyoshi Island as interesting is because it seems like they've done a one-to-one swap of him failing on Kyoshi Island is the live-action version of him losing to Zuko in the Agni Kai.
Oh, yeah.
Which is, like, way less cool. way less cool. Because
they still have the Agni Kai.
Zuko punches next to him. And it's like, that's him symbolized, like, I won, but I'm not going to kill you, whatever. And then Zhao's like, your father raised a coward and tries to stop. And then Iroh steps in and stops him, which is sick and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, so he grabs them both by the
I was disappointed with that. I think they're probably just hanging on to Agni Kai for a later.
They have to introduce it. Like, it has to be introduced at some point. Like, there's just no way.
They'll introduce it in some way. I was just, like, kind of waiting for it. And then I was realizing, like, oh, this is going to be the swap that kind of, like, puts them on the same level where it's like, okay, Zhao's failed. Now we're kind of leveled out a little bit. Yeah.
They have to give us the Zuko versus Fire Lord Agni Kai flashback. That needs to be
included.
So we're going to get an Agni Kai.
Yeah,
and speaking of the Fire Lord, I didn't know that Daniel Dae Kim was a voice actor in the original series. He played opening episode of season two. It's the crazy earthbending general who tries to force the Avatar state out of Aang.
Mm-hmm. Oh, he plays that guy.
Daniel Dae Kim.
That's awesome.
Yeah, and he also plays a character named Hiroshi in Korra. So
I saw a video.
A friend of the series.
I saw a video of him. Talking about Mark Hamill, because Mark Hamill was the voice of
Fire
Lord
Ozai. I was just going to ask. I was like, speaking of voice acting in Fire Lord Ozai, do you guys remember who is his voice actor? But
yeah.
Mark Hamill?
Yeah.
Oh, dude, I'll have to send you. I saw it was like kind of like a few months ago. It was like a TikTok. It was like actors that you would be totally shocked to know that voice a part in Avatar The Last Airbender. And it is like 20 actors that I was like, holy shit.
Is it,
but Mark
is
Hamill,
it Serena Williams?
Yeah, Serena Williams is a voice actress in the show. Yeah.
That's
fucking
cool.
It's fucking crazy. But he was just basically saying, like, it was so cool to work with Mark Hamill, just because, you know, he had so much to offer him. And it was just really cool hearing his opinions on working with Mark Hamill and really taking on that Fire Lord Ozai character.
Well, the look is fucking on point.
The muscles, baby. I can't
dude,
wait.
He is he looks intimidating and powerful. So that's
he's got that sharp jawline. It's
that's step one. So
all right,
Amy
any final
Hotman.
Hotman.
Oh man, we better get Hotman too. Obviously, we're far away from that, but we'll see.
Any final thoughts? Do you want to give like a 1 out of 10, or do we not even want to do that?
I don't know if I can give you like a 1 out of 10. I feel like I'm in a really weird spot of it's kind of better than I thought, but I still like am kind of meh on it.
Yeah. I mean, the animated, like we all have said throughout the pod, is just going to triumph over this anyway.
It is fun. I mean, this was fun to talk about it though.
And I've had
opinions and so.
But well, it's because I mean, we'll I'm reflecting this, onto the animated show more. So it's just like I'm thinking about that in these moments.
Yeah. We'll see.
If you're asking me to quantify it, I cannot give it more than a 5 out of 10.
All right, that's fine.
Probably
that's
fine.
Average.
See, this was my process was I'll give it. First episode was a 6.5. Second one was like a 5. That averages out to like a 5.5. I'll say so far on the show.
It is not a disservice to the source material, though.
Yeah, agreed.
It isn't an absolute disgrace, you know.
No, it's better than the movie, which is a great start.
Yes. We're
so
that
it's
is
not
the
a zero
stone.
Out of 10.
Yeah, yeah, it's not a zero.
We all watched that in theaters together.
Yes,
and
we
even
did.
At the crisp age of like 13, we were all like, wow, that's probably the worst thing I've ever seen in my entire life. Yeah.
It still is. Yeah. It still is. Oh, although yeah. M Night's a fucking Philly area guy, so shout out, but damn, bro, let us down on that one.
Yeah, that one was brutal. Yeah, all righty. That will be it for today's episode coverage of Avatar The Last Airbender. This did come out on Netflix, so we're going to do our best to try and rush out these episodes as soon as we can, get through the entire season for you guys. I know everyone at this point is probably for the most part finished it, but we're
definitely done. Seeing like the most insane Twitter threads and arguments about people. It's like they watch it all in one day.
We're going to do our best to try and keep up with you guys, but no promises on when the next one will be released. It will just be as soon as we can. If you like what you heard, give Bingetown TV a follow on all of our socials on X, Insta, YouTube, and all of that good stuff. Be sure to join our Discord and chat with us about anything that you're currently watching, anything that you're watching with us. We'd love to know your opinions, especially on something like this. This is one of those shows that can cause a high controversy, so we would love to have those debates in the comments and on Discord as well. Lastly, for an organized list of all of our podcast recordings and episodes, you can go check out bingetowntv.com. Everything there. We have a nice tab for you. It's all alphabetical. If there's something that you've watched, we've probably covered it. So go ahead and recite and go check out those episodes as well. And if I didn't say it enough, once again, we are Bingetown TV, and thanks for listening.
You're listening to the Geekscape Network.